Mimi Goodman. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Democracy Now!
Hi, this is Alexander Supertramp.
And this is Trailing from Earthling.
And you're listening to
WUSB Stony Brook
90.1 FM.
And the time is just about 6 o'clock. Time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour or so on this election day, 2005. And, you know, even as I speak, there's a bit of a commotion going on downstairs. I came into the building and noticed a crowd of people gathered round. I thought maybe it was a fire alarm or something, or maybe even a fight. You know, I haven't seen a fight in a while. They do happen occasionally. But what I saw surprised me. It was actually a crow. That's right, there's a crow stuck between the outer door and the inner door of the Student Union building here at Stony Brook, and there are people standing on chairs trying to convince him to leave through the door. And he's staying up by the roof, and it's stopping traffic everywhere. It's amazing what one bird can do. But that's the kind of thing you can expect to see in a place where there's lots of wildlife. Not that a crow really qualifies as wildlife these days, but it's fun, yeah. Today is Election Day, though, and thanks to all those people who wrote in, correcting me that last week was not Election Day, yes. The exact rule is as follows. I don't know why, I don't know how. It's pretty bizarre. Maybe somebody can look this up and figure out how it ever came to be. But Election Day is not the first Tuesday of the month. It is the first Tuesday of the month following the first Monday. Let me rephrase that, because that came out really bad. It's the Tuesday after the first Monday of November. Okay? I don't know why. It makes no sense at all. Why not just have it be the first Monday? No, it's the Tuesday after the first Monday. It's really bizarre. Who wrote this? Why? What were they on? And for that matter, why, in God's name and all that is holy, have elections in the middle of the week, in the middle of the working week? I guarantee you at this moment there are people listening, or people not listening who are thinking this. How can I possibly make it home in time so that I can vote? Because I'm working so hard today. How about that? You ever think about that? Those people who go into work at some ungodly hour. They leave on the Long Island Railroad or whatever commuter line they take, or maybe they drive, who knows. And they just stay at the office. They stay until 7, 8, midnight. You know, sometimes they just stay really, really late because they have a project they have to finish. And the world goes on without them. The sun rises, the sun sets. Venus comes out, and sets after the sun too, but the point is these people don't make it home in time to vote, and their voices are never heard. In other places, including the establishments that we're making, the new regimes, the puppet governments, the colonies, whatever you want to call them, states, who knows, places like Afghanistan, Iraq, you know, the places that we're are dominoes, let's put it that way. When we instill governments there, or install governments there rather, we have elections on the weekends. That's right. That's the one thing we're doing over there that makes sense. So I ask, why? Why can't we do that here? I know we are loath to change anything. It's always the last thing we ever want to do is change something. Everything always has to stay the same. Let's not reform elections. Let's not have more than two candidates. Let's not build more rails or dramatically alter the way we live our wasteful lives. God forbid you alter anything in the Constitution. You know, every country in Europe has had their Constitution modified over the past couple of decades. Sometimes you do need to tweak things, you know? You need to update things. It's not always a bad thing. Oh, it's bad when they want to put stupid things in there. Like making it against the Constitution to burn the flag or to have gay marriage or silly things. But sometimes you have to update people's rights as the world changes. There was no internet in the 1700s. And people are running roughshod over our rights on the internet, and that needs to be affirmed, and there are certain things that can be said in the Constitution to make sure that that's as clear as can possibly be. I think, you know, the reason a lot of people are afraid to update the Constitution is because, well, if you do, you might have to take a close look at the Second Amendment and try to figure out just what the hell that's all about. And those people, you know, gripping their triggers, they're, you know, kind of worried how people might interpret it if they really started to think about it. I'm going to get letters about what I've said so far, even though I haven't said anything. That's how paranoid they are. So, at some point, you know, at some point things do have to change. You got to take those steps. And it just hasn't happened. I see no signs of it happening. It's going to take something big, something major. And we've seen a lot of big and major things over the past 5 years or so. But we still keep making the same mistakes. So I think, you know, just simply moving Election Day to a weekend, or maybe at least making it a national holiday, you know, that might be a nice cautious step to take. And then that could lead to more things because more people will vote. And then we'll have a greater representation. And then we can do all that other stuff. All in due time. But seriously, if you have not voted yet, you should. I just did. Right before I came over here, and it was fun. Only took a couple of minutes. Not really very many important positions up for grabs around here, that's for sure. I mean, voting for I guess voting for judges is kind of important, but, you know, they don't really campaign all that much, so you don't really know what they stand for. And in more than one instance, the same candidate was running on five different parties, including Democrat and Republican, and there was no opposition. So, you know, I don't think my voice really matters as far as that goes. But so be it. You know, you show up anyway, you vote on the various referendums that are out there. Very few referendums. It'd be nice if we had a few more of those. But one rather important one is the transportation referendum that will determine if there's enough money to build things like the Second Avenue subway and the Grand Central Long Island Railroad hub. All these things that I've been promised since I was a kid. You know, maybe now we'll finally get them if that passes, but we'll have to see. Seems like everybody wants that. And, you know, I can't figure this out either. How far ahead the mayor of New York is. Actually, you know what? I can sort of figure it out. Mayor Bloomberg is so far ahead of Fernando Ferrer, it makes you feel sorry for the guy, even if you hate him. And, you know, I have no strong feelings on Fernando Ferrer at all, except to say that he really hasn't done a good job campaigning. And it's got nothing to do with how much money he spent. He didn't tackle the strong issues. And there are certainly a lot of strong issues that he could have tackled. I mean, look at the tremendous waste that whole stupidity involving getting the Olympics to New York and the West Side Stadium and all that. You know, look at all the questionable activity concerning the RNC, the Republican Convention, where I was one of the people taken off the streets. You know, to see people support somebody who did that, somebody who supported those kinds of actions against innocent people, that's kind of nerve-wracking right there. And maybe it would have been an issue if Fernando Ferrer had brought it up some more. I don't know. You need to be a bit more in your face with these kinds of things, and he just wasn't, which is a typical Democrat thing to do. To not speak up enough. To not bring up the controversial issues. I'll give you an example. Just today, well, this is really a bad example because Joe Lieberman is really a Republican. I don't care. He calls himself a Democrat, but he's a Republican, all right? There's so many things. He supports the war. He's so to the right on just about every issue I can think of. Today he said that the Supreme Court nominee Samuel Alito told him a lot of people rely on the decision establishing abortion rights as president, and he called his comments encouraging. But he says the nominee hadn't committed to upholding the decision in the future, so he could still completely overturn Roe versus Wade. He could easily do that. He's not going to say. But Lieberman thinks it's encouraging. Oh, that's just great. Thank you, Joe. Thank you so much. Because we know you're not going to block this. You'll vote to confirm the guy. The guy's going to get in. He's going to overturn Roe versus Wade. And you'll say, wow, I didn't see that coming. Not that you'll care all that much anyway, being a Republican. Come out of the closet already. Seriously, there are so many people in that Republican closet that need to come out. And the Democrats need to do quite a bit of soul-searching as well. Maybe, you know, the Democrats that are there really aren't Democrats. Or maybe we just need a different party completely. Or maybe we just don't need parties at all. We need individuals. We need a lot. We're not getting it. And I don't think this election is going to do much to prove me wrong as far as that goes. Would be nice to see every single Republican candidate lose based on what George W. Bush has done over the past year. Well, not to mention the past 5 years, but just the past year alone. Would be nice. You know, even if they're completely innocent and don't agree with him at all, it just would be nice to see that kind of backlash. Might wake some people up. It's not going to happen, of course. but I can dream. Then you got the races in places like New Jersey. Listen to this. One of the candidates said his opponent's ex-wife said he let his family down and that he'd probably let the state down too. Can you believe this? This is the campaigning that they do. They don't talk about the issues. They talk about what someone's ex-wife said. The campaigning in New Jersey has been so bad, so negative, that people are actually considering voting for the current governor who's not running. And he's begged people not to do that. Probably because he thinks he could win because people are so disgusted. That would be cool. That would be cool if he was elected over his own objections because people are so disgusted. In Virginia, one of the candidates said his rival was so opposed to the death penalty he wouldn't have executed Hitler. Yeah, that's real smart. Bring Hitler into the race. That's what we want. That's what the people want to talk about is Hitler. You know the Godwin law that says if you bring Hitler up in any discussion, you've automatically lost that discussion, that argument. Made by Mike Godwin, one of the people involved with EFF and hacker issues over the years. I have a counterpoint to that. You can call it the Goldstein law, where every argument must have Hitler injected into it as quickly as possible. So whatever you're talking about, inject Hitler into that. I don't know if it'll make you win the argument, but it'll make people remember the argument. And I guess that's more important, isn't it? And yes, getting back to the New York City mayoral's race, Fernando Ferrer spent part of Election Day pressing the flesh in the Bronx. What a disgusting phrase that is, pressing the flesh. Okay, well, you know, it's AP copy. I'm just reading what it says. We all have to read the same words, every radio station in the country. So you'll hear the words, the phrase, pressing the flesh a lot when it comes to Fernando Ferrer today, I'll bet. Go ahead, tune up and down the dial, well, those stations that still have news. Anyway, at one stop, the Democratic contender predicted that his supporters would make polling places dance and sing tonight. That's certainly true, except they're going to be the Republican polling places that will be dancing and singing. Actually, wait a minute. The polling places shouldn't be dancing and singing. You shouldn't dance and sing in a polling place. You should dance and sing at the place where they count the votes. Well, not there either. The place where the candidate gathers and his supporters gather. Yeah, that's where the dancing and singing takes place, as far as I know. Anyway, Ferrer is in an uphill battle. Uphill battle? He's at the bottom of a cliff. He's at the bottom of one of those cliffs in Ireland, you know, the ones that overlook the ocean, where it's just craggy rocks going all the way down, and you can't imagine something like that is so big on this planet. He's at the bottom of that. He's by the water, and Bloomberg's up on top on one of those, like, green, grassy knolls that look so picturesque in the Irish scenery there. And he's looking down at Bloomberg and saying, "You can't catch me." And he's right, he can't. How's he going to catch him? He can't climb a cliff like that. The guy's out of shape. Totally out of shape. And he has no willpower. Well, sure, he might hire a helicopter or something to go up to the top of the cliff, but he's not going to. He's going to lose. What's the point? What's the point of spending all this money when you know you're going to lose? And you know what else? I heard this on one of the commercial stations on the way over here. Yeah, I wander. Apparently, these guys are so disorganized at the Fernando Ferrer campaign, they didn't even check to see if they had the rights to their campaign headquarters tonight, where they were going to presumably have a defeat party or whatever. And somebody else, so there's a conference there, they can't even get in. They can't even get into their own place to drink. I don't know what's going to be left. They're not going to be celebrating, I'll tell you that right now. What's the point? We all know. We all know he's doing very badly. Just throw a few more million dollars at it, and that's going to be the end of it. Okay, what else? School shooting. Yes, another school shooting today. Election Day school shooting. This time in Tennessee. Student shot and killed an assistant principal at a high school. Spokesman for the State Education Department says another assistant principal as well as the principal were wounded. So this was a strictly administrative shooting, not a student as victim shooting. But This person had problems with the administration. Not even the teachers, just the administrators. Principal Gary Seal was injured while trying to take the student into custody. The student was arrested. The school's about 30 miles northwest of Knoxville. Parents rushed to the building to take their children home after the shooting. Which, you know, that's a wasted sentence. Of course they're going to do that. It's like saying the sun set today. All right, what else is going on? Okay, things are going crazy in Australia. Things are going crazy everywhere, actually. We're going to deal with that. They're going crazy in Australia. They're going crazy downstairs. They're going crazy in Europe. So we have a lot to cover in the brief time that we have together. And I just noticed our tape recorder isn't recording. Hold on one second. I got to go over and fix that. And I apologize for that because it was recording. It just doesn't have a light that indicates it's recording. Okay, I get it. It's important to document things. It's important to record things. It's important to have the evidence. I wish everybody realized that. Okay, yeah, Australia, things are going nuts. Listen to this. Soldiers with shoot-to-kill powers could be deployed on Australia's streets under tough new anti-terrorism laws the government hopes to have in place by next year's Commonwealth Games. That's according to the defense minister. The new laws would make it easier for Australia to deploy troops domestically in case of a terrorist threat or attack. That's according to Defense Minister Robert Hill. There would be greater flexibility in the call-out provisions to meet a wider range of scenarios. It would ease the processes for calling out the military. And under these laws, troops would be given rights to detain people, shoot and kill suspects, and search and seize property. He said the government would introduce the new laws to Parliament as soon as possible, with the aim of having them in place in time for the Commonwealth Games in March. Have you guys lost your minds? Think about what you're saying here. Deploying soldiers to shoot and kill suspects? Suspects! Do you know how many times I've been a suspect? We're all suspects. You're all suspected of something. We're all accused of things. Evidence tends to prove whether that's right or wrong. But these guys, they can be the judge, jury, and executioner. All in the interest of preventing terrorism. Well, you know what? That is the terrorism. How else would you define something like that? That terrorizes people. That affects the way you live. Makes me not want to go to Australia, I'll tell you that right now. And I imagine a lot of Australians don't want to be in Australia either. And then just now, Australian prosecutors are going after 17 people on terrorism charges today. It's interesting how these things always seem to go in pairs. The announcement of these new laws, new proposed laws, came a couple of days ago. But this just happened. Police made the arrest in Sydney and Melbourne. And those arrested include a Muslim cleric accused of masterminding a cell dedicated to violent jihad. And there was an 18-month investigation. They claim to have averted terrorist bombings. We believe we've been able to significantly disrupt a proposed terrorist attack here in Australia. That's according to New South Wales Police Commissioner Ken Maroney. Prosecutor Richard Maidment told the court the 9 people arrested formed a terrorist group to kill innocent men and women in Australia. The members of the Sydney group had been gathering chemicals of a kind that were used in the London Underground bombings. However, no actual bombs were found. Victorian State Police had more than 240 hours of phone intercepts in which the group discussed plans to kill Australian civilians. Some of them had attended military training, and they had pooled a fund of money to finance alleged plots. There were wild scenes. I don't know if you saw any of the footage of this today, but there were wild scenes outside the Melbourne court as young men scuffled and traded punches with media crews covering the suspects' appearances. Now, that was bizarre. That was really bizarre. I was watching that on BBC, where it was just basically a brawl. These rather large men appeared and started attacking the media. Now, it strikes me as weird that someone arrested for terrorism, potentially blowing things up, blowing people up, would have all these people show up to support them quite openly, not wearing anything over their faces, expressing such anger. I mean, what are they thinking? How dare you infringe upon our rights to commit terrorist acts? You know, maybe it's not that. Maybe these guys really believe they're innocent. And maybe there's more to this story than we're being told. It's a very unusual thing when terrorists are captured to have people show up and demand that they be released. Now, they could be completely guilty. I think the existing court system will show whether or not that's true. And guess what? They didn't need all these extra laws to catch these people, did they? They didn't need the soldiers to be able to shoot and kill people on the street. My God. Hopefully Australians will wake up before we wake up. And over in England, British Prime Minister Tony Blair set the scene for a showdown with rebels in his Labour Party. Are they rebels, or is he the rebel? I don't know. Doesn't seem like what he's doing represents what the Labour Party used to stand for. But he refused to back down on plans to let police hold terrorist suspects without charge for up to 90 days. Without charge for up to 90 days. After signaling earlier on Monday that it would settle for a shorter detention period, Blair's government insisted support was growing for the three-month measure. Blair says the extension from 14 days will help police tackle a new terrorist threat revealed by Islamist. Islamist? That's a hard word to say. Why can't we just say Islamic? Islamist. All right. Suicide bombings in London on July 7th. Critics say the measures will erode civil rights and boost recruitment for militant groups. Opinion has moved very, very strongly over the last 48 hours. I don't know why. Towards the idea that we should have a 90-day period of pre-charge detention. That's according to Home Secretary Charles Clark. I am confident and believe that we will be able to carry the vote. 72% of those canvassed believe the 90-day detention limit was appropriate. I'm speechless. What has happened to people? How could they support something like this? You know, I think what's going through their heads is they're saying to themselves, well, yeah, hold somebody for 90 days. They're guilty after all. What's the harm in that? Hold them for 90 days while you prepare the paperwork. You know, cross all the T's and dot the I's, whatever you have to do. So that assumption that anyone arrested is guilty, that's what is flawed. Because so many times that's not the case. Look at the people in Guantanamo Bay. We like to assume they're all guilty. Americans like to assume everybody being held in Guantanamo Bay is evil. Yet, if you watch the news, if you pay attention, you'll see that they keep getting released without charge, after being held for a few years. Why? Because there's no evidence against them. It's simply wrong to hold people without evidence. That's one of the basic tenets of society. Isn't it a day? Isn't that what we were led to believe we had, you know, hold me or charge me or whatever? But after a day, you have to let me go. Pretty sure it was a day. And now they want to make it 90 days in England. And people support that. It's just unbelievable. Meanwhile, a group of Labour and opposition parliamentarians have pressed for a 28-day limit. That's still way too long. Blair clearly believes he can win over more Labour MPs. He addressed them behind closed doors late on Monday, as the opposition parties are showing no signs of budging. We have made it absolutely clear we think 28 days is the absolute limit of what should be permitted, Conservative leader Michael Howard said. And it's really a sorry day when I have to side with the Conservatives, but in this case, I think 28 days is way too long. If you have a case, you have a case. If you don't, you have no business holding people. Why not just hold everybody then until you can see whether or not they're guilty of anything? That way they won't commit any crimes. Unreal. Meanwhile, five U.S. soldiers from the 75th Ranger Regiment have been accused of beating detainees in Iraq. That's according to the U.S. military. And you know it's bad when the U.S. military is the one reporting this story. The allegations stem from an incident on September 7th in which three detainees were allegedly punched and kicked by the soldiers as they were awaiting movement to a detention facility. That's according to a news release from the U.S. military. Charges were filed November 5th after an investigation into the alleged abuse. And that announcement came on a day when President Bush told reporters the United States does not condone torture. Yeah. Finally actually says something like that. Of course, we all know it's not true. A week after the evidence of the secret prisons that the CIA is maintaining throughout the world, after countless first-hand accounts of what goes on inside places like that, he says, our country is at war, and our government has the obligation to protect the American people. Bush said in Panama City, Panama, there is an enemy that lurks and plots and plans and wants to hurt America again. Well, I got to read that line again. There is an enemy that lurks and plots and plans and wants to hurt America again. Cut to commercial. Oh, my God. What has this guy been smoking? Or, I don't know. Ugh. So you bet we'll aggressively pursue them, but we will do so under the law. What that means is they're going to change the law. And meanwhile, a leading Republican senator said Sunday the Bush administration is making a terrible mistake in opposing a congressional ban on torture and other inhuman treatment of prisoners in U.S. custody. Senator Chuck Hagel, considered a potential presidential candidate in 2008, said many Republican senators support the ban proposed by Senator John McCain, another Republican, also a prisoner of war during the Vietnam War. Now, ask yourself this. Why, if we don't support torture, would we also oppose a congressional ban on torture? Ask yourself that, Mr. Bush. Vice President Dick Cheney has lobbied Republican senators to allow an exemption for prisoners held by the CIA if preventing an attack is at stake. You know, it's the same story in so many different places. England, Australia, United States. It's really pretty sickening. And, you know, it also bothers me whenever we see a story like this about people being abused or tortured, they always leave out the names. You notice that? The release by the military, they didn't tell us who they're talking about. Why do that? Why further complicate matters by releasing the identities of the people who are accused of this? Oh, innocent until proven guilty. I guess that's okay in the military. Won't be held for 90 days without charge, but still, you know, I think we have the right to know. We have the right to know who is being accused. And that goes for the people in Guantanamo Bay as well. If you saw the story in the Washington Post last week that revealed the existence of CIA prisons around the world, which, you know, I can't imagine why there aren't riots in the streets of this country after hearing something like that. I really can't understand that. But after the Washington Post revealed that, on the front page of their website, they had a list of all of the names of the people they were able to find out about at Guantanamo Bay. They were not told these names by the administration. The administration refuses to release that information. They want to keep it secret. And the Washington Post printed the names. That's the kind of reporting we need more of. Unbelievable. And yeah, we have a scandal here at Stony Brook, too. A little bit less dramatic. But, you know, it just goes to show the mentality is the same. We had an incident at a soccer game where one of the players here used the N-word against an opposing player. Yeah. Now, you know, it's... Well, I'm going to read you part of the story from Newsday. And you can see just how absurd the whole thing is right now. The mother of the Stony Brook University soccer player accused of making a racial slur against a black member of Vermont's team says her son has been unfairly singled out. The player, who is not being named by Newsday, has served a 2-game suspension and will undergo mandatory counseling. You know, I could not think of a more sanitized version of a story if I had, you know, an entire week to come up with one. you read that paragraph and you don't realize that this is important at all. You know, someone comes up to you and says, this guy was suspended 2 games for using the N-word. And you say, wow, what's the big deal? And then you tell someone, you know, this guy called somebody else a nigger. And you wince because you should. It's a horrible thing to call somebody. But yet, somehow, it's now one of those things we don't say. We don't report that. It's one of the 7 nasty words that we can't say, even though it's not. When you throw it in somebody's face, you might get a sense that this is a really horrible thing to do to somebody. And those of us who are white, we have no idea. And it's something that we shouldn't feel guilty that we have no idea, but we don't. We should realize that fact. We don't have any idea what that feels like. Now, should this guy be drawn and quartered and abused? No. He did something incredibly insensitive, stupid, and he should be called to account for that. Instead, what's going on, what the university is doing, what the newspapers are doing, they're protecting his identity. Why? Why would you protect somebody's identity who does something like that? What's the point? You know, if your reaction at a sporting event, if you're playing a game against somebody else, is to right away use a word like that, you've got a problem. You've got a serious problem. You know, it's not something like engaging in school shootings or things like that, or horribly violent acts, but it's still something that, you know, I can't believe that we're still even talking about this in 2005. So covering it up is not going to fix anything. You have to approach these things head on. The guy's got to account for what he did, and we have to try and understand if he's being sincere when he says that he's learned from it. But printing stories like this, where, you know, you have the mother of some unnamed person saying that her son is a victim for saying an unnamed word to someone somewhere. It's silly. It really is just, come on already. Something bad happened. Let's look at it objectively. Let's report the facts. Let's report the players, the people. And let's move on. Who are we protecting here? Listen to this. Anderlecht Serbia's striker. Or is it Anderlecht Serbia's striker? I don't know. It's a soccer team, all right? Oh boy, I got to read the guy's name now. Nenad Jestrovic, okay, that wasn't so bad, has been banned for 3 European games by UEFA, that's the European Football Association, after being found guilty of racism during last week's Champions League game with Liverpool. So, you know, it's not just Stony Brook, obviously. It's all over the world. UEFA found Jestrovic guilty of a racially motivated insult. Again, they won't tell you what he said, but I guess it's not really that important in this context right now. Directed at the Mali-born French midfielder Mohamed Sissoko on Liverpool's 3-0 victory at Anfield. Yeah, they get the score in. They won't tell you what he said, but they'll get the score in. Jestrovic will miss the last 2 Group G matches against Chelsea and Real Betis, as well as 1 further game in UEFA club competitions. The Serbia and Montenegro international said last week, I am not a racist, but unfortunately I don't matter and the referee does. You see, that's somebody who has not learned anything. You know? That's somebody who has not learned. Nenad Jestrovic. See, we know who he is. People should account for their actions. Here at Stony Brook, we cover up the actions, and that's just wrong. Hopefully next week, that story will have more of a happier outcome. I'm not talking about retribution or anything like that. I'm talking about people realizing they did something incredibly stupid, apologizing, moving on, and maybe keeping some other people from doing stupid things as well. Okay, now there's other craziness going on all around the world, as I guess that's sort of the theme of this program. All throughout France, there are riots going on. This has been going on for, I think this is the 13th night. Actually, I'm not sure if it's going on tonight. I imagine it will. But it all started more than almost 2 weeks ago when two kids were accidentally electrocuted as they were allegedly running from the police. I've heard that's not even true, that they were just electrocuted. And what it pointed out, what it brought out in French society was attention to the tremendous inequities that exist over there, where people grow up their entire lives, they have no hope. They have massive unemployment, up to 50% in some parts of the country, and tremendous prejudice because of who they are. We're not even talking about immigrants. We're not even talking about people who are foreign nationals who settle in the country and have every right to settle in the country, too, because their countries were colonized by France centuries ago or decades ago. That's not even an issue. These are the children or even the grandchildren of people who came to the French nation. And yet, to this day, they are still ostracized. They are still kept from achieving opportunities like many other people in the country have no problem doing. And that boiled over. Over 300 separate communities have experienced riots where young people have been running around, torching cars, burning down schools, throwing stones, attacking police. It's not a good scene. It's not a good scene at all. And people all over the world are trying to put an end to it, telling people to calm down. But horrible as the actual situation is, it does bring attention to something that so many have been ignoring. And that is just the conditions so many people have to live under. We think everything is cool. We think everything's okay. It's not. It's not in this country. It's not in that country. It's not in any country. And what this indicates, what this shows us, is just how tenuous the whole thing is. A simple incident can provoke so many people. I mean, you know, not to encourage this kind of thing, because I think it's reprehensible to hurt people, to attack people, to be violent. I don't really care so much about the property. But imagine if there were riots in every community in this country where people felt the war was something bad, something wrong, something that victimized people in their community. Imagine that every night. What do you think would happen? You think they might actually address the issue? It would take a while, but they probably would. That's what they're doing over there. They're addressing the issue. They're not doing a very good job of either that or controlling the violence. And I'm not even sure how much of it actually is classified as violence. I mean, obviously there are people throwing stones at other people. That's violence. There are people, one person died after being beaten up, so there's definitely violence here. How much of it is actually violent, I don't know. We're going to speak to somebody over there, in fact. We're going to make a call to a friend of mine, Pierre, in Paris. All right, well, look, his name is Pierre. He's in Paris, all right? It can happen, you know. It can happen. Wipe the smirk off your face. We're not making the name up. His name really is Pierre, and he really is in Paris. All right, if you don't like it, go to Hot 97 or something. It's true. Let's see if we can get a dial tone here. All right, but you know what? It's not coming over the board. I need to play with this wire. There we go. How this studio makes it through a day, I don't know. All right. I'm sorry. I waited too long. The outside line. Now, it's possible that this first connection is going to sound really bad because we're using the cheap connection. Let's see if we can make it through. If not, we'll call back using a more expensive version.
Your call is being connected. Please wait.
Yeah, that's the operator for the cheap service. A French ring.
Yes?
Hello, is this Pierre?
Hello?
Can you hear me? Okay, great. Pierre, this is Emmanuel over at Off the Wall. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Okay. We were following the story of all the rioting going on over in your part of the world. You're in Paris, right?
Yeah, I'm in Paris, in the north of Paris. And actually, there is a lot of media attention around the events of the riots in France. The American newspapers say that the France is in fire. From Palestine, the situation is seen as an intifada. And then in France, some people think this is the beginning of civil war. But actually, there is a problem. There is an escalation in the media communication. If you watch at TV, you'll see a bus burning in the suburbs of Paris. And the next image you'll see will be a bus in fire in Middle East. There's still a problem. But I think it's not a security problem, but much more a social issue. The people burning cars in the suburbs are often 15-year-old, and they burn their own schools, their own buses, their own public equipment. So I don't think we should answer by violence, because this is a really important social issue. These people live in areas where there is actually no hope for education. There is daily violence in these areas. Their parents I don't know the word in English, but don't help their child to and don't educate properly their child, and because there is a lot of a big percent of non-working people in these areas.
Well, I hear the unemployment rate is up to 50% in those parts of the country.
Yeah. But the problem is not even the percentage of non-working people, but these people can't even go out of these areas, and this is the main problem. It's a question of policy, of immigration policy, and these people don't even have a chance to have access to the French system of cultural system, etc.
Well, I've heard that there's a certain social exclusion that goes on over there. But how does that happen? Why can't they get access to the same things that other people in the country can get access to?
Oh, okay. I think there is a big difference between integration, what these people want, and between assimilation, that may be a crucial error from the government to think that people should be assimilated to the French culture. But actually, a culture is built from different, from several point of views, from several cultures, and maybe this could explain this escalation in exclusion.
Well, tell me, Pierre, have you been surprised by what's been going on? Did you expect something like this to happen?
Not really, because this is something that that should happen, because it was latent from for several years. There is they don't have any educational system. A lot of people, intellectual people, ring the alarm several years ago, and nothing was done. And there was only need for a little incident like what happened in nearly 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
Because, yeah, this the I don't know how it's perceived from the United States, but what happened 2 weeks ago is that there was a police control in the suburbs, and two young people died. But we don't know exactly the details, and we don't even know what really happened. Mm-hmm. And it was this incident, if we can call it an incident, is starting the process of violence and burning, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But these people are often 15 years old, and they're burning their own equipment. And so we should really care of what the problem is, if it's a security problem or if it's a social issue. And I think it's a social issue, but it's not too late to help these people to give them a chance. And we should improve the education of the system in this areas, maybe give them some social structure. There is a lot that can be done.
It seems like common sense. That should have been done from the start. I'm wondering, how are they going to actually stop what's going on right now? I mean, they're imposing curfews all throughout the country. Do you think that's going to help?
There is a mutual provocation from both sides. And the last measure the French government by Dominique Villepin, our prime minister, is to have a curfew dating tomorrow. I think it's a really bad idea, because people provoke themselves from both sides, and young people burn cars, and the government give them some names. And I walked in my street this morning, and I saw policemen showing off their gun, and I live in a pretty calm area. There is some kind of violent cult, and the fear is propagated by the media, and therefore the media enforce the sense of fear, and from fear there is violence, etc., etc. So we have to break this circle, but I think the solution is not to answer by violence. These people don't even have any revendication. They do this because they're desperate, and I'm not really sure they want war.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I've heard people say that there's a possibility of civil war in France now. I don't know if that's an exaggeration, but in looking at what's happening over there and projecting it over to this country, if such a thing were to happen here, I don't think the reaction would be nearly as calm as what we're seeing. I mean, you might even call it ineffective because the rioting is continuing, but I think over here there would be many, many deaths already from police opening fire, and that doesn't seem to be happening over there.
Yeah, there is excessive violence. And I don't say that people who are violent with other people are good people because they are poor, because they live in a defavorized environment, extra. No, but I think we should listen to them. It's not a solution to answer this way. Mm-hmm. And these areas are maybe voluntary put aside because they are not economically interesting, etc. Maybe we should have a consciousness of what happened and not what we can see. There is a big difference.
How do the people that that you hang out with, how do they react to this? Are they angry about what's happening, or what do people want to do about it?
Yeah, people in the suburbs are angry because this is a minority of young people acting like this, and they're angry because their cars are burned by their child. They don't understand the violence, but they acknowledge that it should have come, and they ask for maybe a social existence, a social acknowledgement by the French population.
Mm-hmm. Do you see something like this spreading to other countries?
Sorry?
Do you see this kind of rioting? Do you see this spreading to other countries? I know there was something in Belgium and Germany, but do you think it's going to go beyond the French border?
Yeah, actually it already had, because in these areas, there is a big percent of Maghrebian Muslim people, and as I told you before, it is considered by as an intifada in Palestine, and the movement is propagated in two different directions. The first is the general people from the suburbs who suffer from the economic situation, and the other direction is the religious way, because this is a good way of feeling in a community which is often break down when you leave your country and get in another and a completely different culture.
All right, Pierre, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for talking to us, and stay safe. Hopefully things aren't too dangerous over there in Paris.
No problem. I'm at 5 kilometers from the suburbs, and then there is nothing that cops showing off.
All right. Well, good talking to you.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye. Take care. Talking to Pierre, one of our friends over in Paris, where not so much rioting in Paris. There has been some, but mostly throughout all kinds of different communities where economic issues, unemployment is high over there in France. And we'll certainly be keeping an eye on that story and see if that has any effect on things in other parts of the world. Well, our time is up, and I feel like going out with a little Nirvana. Yeah. Manuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Good night.
Load up on guns and bring your friends. It's fun to lose and to pretend. She's overboard, she's self-assured. Oh no, I know a dirty word. Hello, 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 how low. Hello, 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 how low. With the lights felt less dangerous. Here we are now. Entertain us. I feel stupid. I'm contagious. Here we are now. Entertain us. I'm a lotto. An albino. A mosquito. My libido. Yeah. I'm worse at what I do best, and for this gift I do feel blessed. And our little group has always been and always will until the end. Hello, 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 how low. Here we are now. Entertain us. I feel stupid. Contagious. Here we are now. Entertain us. I'm a lotto. An albino. A mosquito. My libido.